of community members with signs and things like that. Okay, great.
Yep, community members, educators, students.
If you want to be more involved or specifically involved with this, I would urge people to check out the Recall Brian Shannon campaign. They're always looking for donations, people to help canvas or any other thing they have there. I think they're also linked with the Recall Learn Z Bershauer, and I always butcher her last name, who actually was who was supportive of the Save Our Schools PAC and endorsed the four conservative board members. So those are two very easy ways to give time and money.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us. And I know this has been a really, like you said, deeply stressful and challenging year. And to have this on top of it is really, it feels like too much, I'm sure. So thank you so much for
joining us. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys
for having us.
Yeah, and thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m.
It is KBOO's Fall Membership Drive here at KBOO Portland. You can help us reach our goal. This is the last week of our Fall Membership Drive, and we need your support. Text KBOO to the number 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give and make your contribution in support of free independent community radio right now.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Sheridan Murphy with the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you. Thanks so much. It's an important day. It's Indigenous Peoples Day, and thank you again for coming to celebrate the holiday with us and taking your time to answer a lot of questions that we have about why Indigenous Peoples Day is so important. So can you start by telling us a little bit about how you got involved with all these different projects?
Currently, I'm the president of the board for the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, mostly because we have a lot of great board members. I'm the only one currently living in Florida, where Leonard is incarcerated right up the road from me at Coleman, Florida. So the honor of being the president of the board. I also have worked with the American Indian Movement, which is what got me connected to the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. And here in Florida, I work with a group called the Florida Indigenous Alliance, which works on the civil, human, and treaty rights of Native peoples throughout the Western Hemisphere, but with a focus on issues here in Florida.
With mention of Leonard, can we get some background on just who that is? We have quite a few listeners who are very familiar with the case of Leonard Peltier, long-term U.S.-held Indigenous political prisoner and POW. Can you give us some context there, and then we can talk about kind of more recent goings on with Leonard's case?
Right. Leonard Peltier was an organizer, still is, within the American Indian Movement. He was called, along with another group, to Oglala, South Dakota, to protect the traditional community there during what was called a reign of terror on the Pine Ridge Reservation, where the Bureau of Indian Affairs Police and a group called the Guardians of the Oglala Nation, along with the Federal Bureau of Intimidation, were attacking traditional people. There were 60 some odd murders during this period, a lot of violence directed at traditionals in the wake of the liberation of Wounded Knee. And Leonard and a group from upper Northwest, up by you guys in Portland, went down to Oglala to protect the community. And on June 26th, a group of FBI agents with a warrant they didn't have came looking for someone who wasn't there, stormed into the community and opened fire. And a group of AIM members returned that fire. And in the ensuing gun battle, Joe Stunts, a Coeur d'Alene native brother, 18 years old, was killed, along with two FBI agents, Kohler and Williams. To just make it a quick version here for time, Dino Butler and Bob Robidoux were arrested for the murder of the two agents, and an all-white Cedar Rapids jury found, when given all the evidence of the case, that they were acquitted them on the basis of self-defense. Leonard was brought back later from Canada on falsified affidavits written by a lady who had some mental health issues. And his trial in Fargo, North Dakota, they precluded them from presenting any evidence relating to why that community was there, why they would defend that community, or that the gunfight may have been started by the feds. They also brought in a bunch of falsified evidence that we now know. The ballistics evidence was falsified. The autopsy was maneuvered. I don't know if you want to call it falsified, but it was maneuvered. And the eyewitness testimony we now know was all falsified. Yet Leonard was convicted. He's now spent 46 years in a federal maximum security prison. He's done a couple different prisons, but he's currently in Coleman, Florida, which is about as far as they can put him from his family, some of which lives on the West Coast, some of which lives in the upper Pacific Northwest, some of which lives in the Dakotas, but all of them are about as far as possible from Coleman, Florida. So that's basically where his case is at.
Great. There's probably some people who also aren't familiar as much with AIM as the acronym for American Indian Movement. So the long history of AIM and again, how that's so relevant to Indigenous Peoples Day about struggles and kind of all the different, you know, projects, if you will, things related, everything to calling out the use of Native mascots. And I mean, just so many examples, the list goes on, and I know you're involved with a lot of those things. Can you kind of relate some of that to AIM for people who aren't familiar with that?
Yeah, I mean, the American Indian Movement was born, it really was born when Columbus landed, but the organization was birthed in Minneapolis, Minnesota, by a group of people, Clyde Belcourt, Dennis Banks, Eddie Benton Benai, Pat Bellinger, Mary Jane Wilson, I could go on. It was quite a few individuals that sparked that movement. But basically, they had come to the realization in Minneapolis that the jails were 75% Indian, but the population was only 10% Indian. And the simplest way to relate the confusion is either Indians have a genetic predisposition to crime, or the police were doing something wrong. And AIM went out with video cameras and patrolled the AIM patrol. And lo and behold, the rate of arrests went down. And they started little chapters. One was in Cleveland, one was in Milwaukee, one was in Denver. And they were calling themselves Concerned Indians of America. And it was the 60s, and the CIA did not sound like a good acronym. So one of the elder ladies said, well, you're aiming to do this and you're aiming to that. You know, you call yourselves AIM. And that's where the name American Indian Movement actually came from. The movement had a second birth of sorts when the leadership of the movement, Clyde, Dennis, Russell, went and met Henry Crowdog, and that created the movement in a sweat. And that made the movement a spiritual movement, and it also turned the movement from an urban movement for civil rights into a national movement for sovereignty and treaty rights, which was truly a change. You hadn't seen that in Indian country, a pan-Indian sovereignty movement. You'd had other organizations like United Native Americans and United Indians of All Tribes, Survival of American Indians, which I know is huge up in the Pacific Northwest, but you hadn't had a national entity like AIM. And it became targeted by the FBI, and there were a lot of conflicts back and forth throughout the 70s and into the 80s The movement has continued to exist, continued to evolve. It was at Standing Rock. You see it now up at Line 3 in Air Minnesota, where they're trying to ram a pipeline through the Anishinaabe lands at White Earth and Red Lake. We actually had people from here that went up and got arrested and just came back from up there recently. So you have a host of issues. You know, you mentioned the mascot issue. You know, if you can't have a basic civil conversation about the grinning, goofy Indian logo for the Cleveland team, or, you know, the fact that Redskins is about scalping and genocide, how are you going to have a real conversation about what's happening at Line 3 or the water rights or land rights or, you know, electricity on the Dene Reservation? There's a huge amount of issues we could spend 5 or 10 shows talking about, but the mascot issue becomes a ground zero issue on that. And as far as Indigenous Peoples Day, it's important to recognize that the syphilitic half a planet lost admiral of the ocean seas didn't discover anything when there were at least 25 million native people living in North America at the time that he washed up in the Caribbean and began genocide against the Taino and Arawak nations.
Yeah, and so going back to the land too with Leonard's case, you know, there's a lot of background there too, right? With even mining projects and things of that mm-hmm. nature. So maybe could you maybe remind some of us who aren't familiar with the case, kind of, you know, like really what was going on the ground and how that really relates to that whole 500 yeah. years there?
Yeah, at the same time the shootout happened in Oglala, when they were ostensibly looking for a young Lakota man by the name of Jimmy Eagle, who wasn't there, and they knew it. The Bureau of Indian Affairs sold off 1/3 of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, which is called the Sheep Gunnery Range, for the purpose of uranium mining. There's a lot of uranium mining that occurred on in the Dakotas and also on the Navajo Res in Arizona. And, you know, when you look at the, you know, the government said that the American Indian Movement was one of the most dangerous organizations in America. Sounds really kind of scary. And it makes no sense when you realize that Indians are 0.1% of the population of the United States, and not all Native people are part of the American Indian Movement. The reality was that what the American Indian Movement was doing was calling attention to the fact that 1/8 of the United States' energy resources, the uranium, the oil, the gas, lie on Native lands or Native contested lands, meaning unceded territory that Native people were trying to assert control over. And they would not be able to continue, if Native people actually had control, to get deals like they had on the Dene Navajo Reservation, where they were paying 15 cents a ton for coal or a couple dollars a barrel for oil, as opposed to the going rate, which I don't even know what it is anymore. It used to be in the 30s. So that whole struggle with the American Indian Movement was really about energy resource extraction, which is the same thing the U.S. is fighting all over the world.
So with Leonard's case now, there's been many, many years of many, many different attorneys and legal teams working on different aspects of things. Can we maybe give like a kind of overview of what that's kind of looked like and how that's escalated into whatever's going on today?
Yeah, I mean, Leonard's case is a tragedy. He shouldn't be in there at all. I mean, there's absolutely no evidence that can be used to say that Leonard Peltier killed Kohler and Williams. There's none. Even the former U.S. attorney, James Reynolds, who was over the District of Iowa that Leonard was prosecuted in, has said that Leonard should be out and that his prosecutors, which would be Crooks and Holtman, shaved a few corners to get Leonard convicted. In my mind, that's a polite way of saying they shaved the whole table. His case is horrible. I mean, the autopsy that was done said they could not, and I'm just gonna give that example, that they couldn't tell what caliber the bullets were that killed Agents Kohler and Williams because they were too fragmented. Yet they brought in another medical examiner, Noguchi, who has since been discredited, who didn't look at the bodies and magically said, oh, it was a .223 caliber round. And they magically found a casing in a trunk that they magically claimed matched a gun in Bob Robidoux's car that somehow was Leonard's. They have no evidence. There have been, as you said, a litany of attorneys who have put a lot of time and effort into trying to expose all of this. Unfortunately, the courts have not agreed. They've tripped over themselves to find language to say that, well, if the jury had known that all of this evidence was falsified, we can't say that they would have found him innocent. We don't know if it's probable. O.J. Simpson got acquitted with far more evidence against him than Leonard got convicted with. But a lot of attorneys have tried over the years, and it's ended up to where he doesn't have a lot of legal court options available to him. We know that at least one judge probably was visited by the FBI ex parte prior to one of the appeals, and we don't know how that may have influenced Judge Haney in the decisions that he made. So you're looking at a lot of machinations that the government has used to keep Leonard behind bars. We're hoping that the options that are still available to him will get him out before it's too late. There is a clemency petition filed with Joe Biden. His office has that. We're hoping that Biden will let him out. It's been a long time. We've seen Herman Bell get out. We've seen Oscar get out. We're seeing people get out. He's 77 years old as of September. So, you know, he's not a threat to anybody. You have the former U.S. attorney saying he could get out, should get out. So I think there's hope there for a presidential clemency. There's also the parole board, which may be prevailed upon. He should also be released on compassionate grounds. I mean, he's 77 years old. He's diabetic. He has a heart condition. He's currently in a COVID-ravaged prison. And the former U.S. Attorney General put out a directive to the Bureau of Prisons to release elderly and people with comorbidities from the prisons. And so far, they have released no one from the Coleman Federal Penitentiary on the COVID grounds. And they have COVID right now in Leonard's unit. So, I mean, there's grounds for him to be released, not only because he's innocent, but because of all these other things.
Adam here from Prison Pipeline, asking you to donate now to community-supported radio KBOO 90.7 FM. You can donate right now at kboo.fm/give. We can't be at the station to take your donation by phone, so support us online. Check out the KBOO mobile app, and you can snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please urge your friends and family members to keep us on the air. If you want to hear my sultry pipes on Prison Pipeline, please donate now, and I can promise you that you won't find programs like Prison Pipeline anywhere else. Support the movement for community radio. Support KBOO at kboo.fm/give. Check out the KBOO mobile app and snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. For folks tuning in, we are listening to Prison Pipeline airing from the studios of KBO Portland. We're here with Sheridan Murphy with the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, long-term U.S. held Indigenous political prisoner Leonard Peltier. And it is a holiday. It's Indigenous Peoples Day. And that relates to 500 years of Indigenous resistance to colonialism and slavery. And can we talk a little bit about the kind of resistance that's been going on all this time, and, you know, how that relates to AIM and how that relates to Leonard? And, you know, DAPL was a major issue in the last couple of years. And now we're seeing, you know, the new generation of young people talking about Black Lives Matter and things like that. So what kind of things are stirring these days?
Well, I mean, you go all the way from Hutui. I mean, it's never stopped. You know, the Hutui fought and died struggling for the Taino people. And you continue to see that today with the people getting arrested at Line 3, with the Anishinaabe people getting arrested up there and struggling on a regular basis. DAPL, as you pointed out, the struggle against that, Oak Flats, Thacker Pass, there's all over. You know, they talked about how Afghanistan was the longest war the United States fought, and that's because someone wasn't paying attention. The longest war the United States has fought has been against the indigenous peoples. It's never stopped, you know, whether it was Wounded Knee 1890 or Wounded Knee 1973 or Kanyanka in 1975, all the way through now to what's happening at Line 3. You know, you have the struggle against the celebrations of Columbus that have gone on all over the place. I mean, we don't have statues anywhere to Adolf Hitler or to Pol Pot yet. In every town and square you go to in the United States, there's going to be a statue to somebody whose sole existence was he he killed Native people. I mean, here in Florida, we have Jacksonville, named for Andrew Jackson, who was a genocidal president who, when the Supreme Court told him he couldn't do it, he couldn't move people on a genocidal march to Oklahoma in Woodbury versus Georgia, he said, you enforce it. And he sent the army to make people move on a death march. So it's an ongoing struggle. It's never really stopped. And whether it's called the American Indian Movement or Warrior Society or United Native Americans or whatever the name is, that resistance has continued and will continue. And it's going on everywhere as we speak. Here in Florida, we have struggles with them digging up indigenous cemeteries to put Dollar Generals on top of them. They're trying to extract oil out of the Everglades that the Miccosukee people are struggling against. It's everywhere. People should learn to stand up, you know, whether I think indigenous people are standing up, but I think the dominant society needs to understand, you know, anywhere you go in the world and you talk to indigenous people, whether it's the Miccosukee here, the Lakota, the Snohomish, the Sami in Russia, you go to the Hmong in Vietnam, and you ask them who they are in their language, they'll tell you, we're the human beings, we're the people. Some get arrogant, say we're the real people, but it's still some variation of that. But when I walk down the streets and I ask people who they are, they tell me they're an American. Well, they've already disconnected themselves from being a human being. And when you do that, you suddenly aren't as interested or involved in things like Black Lives Matter, when police are shooting and killing Philando Castile or George Floyd or Arthur McDuffie here in Florida. And, you know, to those of us that work in indigenous rights, we see them killing Philando Castile and George Floyd, and we remember Wesley Badharple or Raymond Yellow Thunder or Zachary Bareheels or any of those people that have been also killed in that way. So there's a connection. It's a human being. And I think the dominant society, whatever the term wants to be, all we need to all realize we're human beings, and we have an obligation as human beings to stand up, to use our voice, to use our power to correct the things that aren't right.
And as we continue to kind of talk about this, what might be some resources too for people to get either more familiarized with Leonard's case, just knowing more about the various histories that you're talking about, and yeah, just good places to plug in for community organizing.
For Leonard's case, I think they could go to the Defense Committee's website. It's www.whoisleonardpeltier.info. The American Indian Movement national organization would be www.aimovement.org. There are other chapters all over the country, and they can find the Florida Indigenous Alliance on Facebook. If you happen to live in Florida, connect with us. And line three, there's a bevy of resources online to connect to for that struggle. Camp McGizzy, M-I-G-I-Z-I, probably be the best one to connect with for line three.
And the website, whoisleonardpeltier.info, is important because there's been variations of even the website, right? That's been, well, basically, you know, taken over or colonized, I guess would be the term. And they've been used for slander from the state. And again, from day one with Leonard's case, it came from that whole connection with the COINTELPRO, the FBI programs. And then fast forward to today, you know, I mentioned DAPL and the incredible surveillance that was going on in that movement too. And so just that perseverance there. But I did want to ask you about kind of relating that to recent movements and how that's always been kind of this shadow, like with Leonard's case specifically.
Yeah, I mean, you have a guy named Ed Woods specifically, who is a former FBI agent. He has no connection to Leonard's case. He didn't know Kohler and Williams. He started a group called the No Parole Peltier Association. I think they still have a website, I don't know. And he was pretty active in trying to spread disinformation and some falsehoods about Leonard's case to people and to twist and omit facts. In Leonard's case, you look at Bill Clinton was talking about giving Leonard a pardon, and 3,000 FBI agents marched in front of, on duty, marched in front of the White House in protest. I think it's the only time the Federal Bureau of Intimidation has tried to publicly and overtly intimidate a president. So there is a lot of that, and it's always existed since the Palmer raids. I mean, the Federal Bureau of Intimidation really has no reason to exist other than to intimidate, quash dissent in the United States. Interestingly, they don't try to quash right-wing white nationalist dissent, but they do a pretty good job going after the Black Panther Party or the American Indian Movement or, you know, the Brown Berets or Union Del Barrio or any of those kind of groups. So there's a big, long history there, and I think people should look at that, you know, when they talk about the federal government.
And, you know, with people like Leonard, for example, long-term U.S. held indigenous political prisoner, so many people know his name, might have kind of heard about the case, and that so many years have gone by. And sometimes people even ask, you know, is he out yet? Or, you know, silly things like that almost, because it's been so long, right?
A lot.
Right. And so with that support, though, that y'all do and people plugging in, it's so important. And can you talk about kind of what that looks like, though, and how that's really, how that's multi-tier and how that's been successful over all this time to continue to really kind of get the word out about the history, right? Not just Leonard, but, you know, the case, the movement, the heritage.
I mean, I think that we've been successful in building support for Leonard. I mean, he has millions of supporters across the world. He had over 1 million people in Russia sign a petition on his behalf. The president of the European Parliament just sent a letter to Biden urging him to grant Leonard a clemency. There's a lot of positives that have come out of it. I think I'm hesitant to ever say we're really successful until Leonard's home. I think that everybody that's been involved with this, especially people, you know, Gene Roach, Yvonne Swan, so many people that have spent a lot more time than I have trying to secure his release and continue to do so with persistence, should be commended, because it is a long struggle and it's not easy. And to continue this is great. I think we have had successes. I think there's a lot of a legacy that Leonard has now. A lot of people know who he is. A lot of people know who the movement is. A lot of people have been drawn to indigenous rights through Leonard. You know, they may not know anything about indigenous rights, but they suddenly felt bad for this older man that's sitting in jail, this grandpa, right? And they learn about his case, they get more involved in it, and then the next thing you know, they're at line three blockading a road because they got into it and they understood why Leonard is in there. You know, I think something out of Leonard's case that shows the strength of Leonard himself is that if you ever talk to him and ask him if he would do it again, he never hesitates and says yes. And I don't know if I have that kind of internal courage, you know. It's impressive. And I think that the success is great, and I think the support is incredibly awesome. But the greatest success will be getting him home to Turtle Mountain.
Well, thanks so much for all the great support work around Leonard's case. And again, folks, if you're not familiar with the case and or you're just looking for updates, it's whoisleonardpelzhere.info. And of course, there's also some social media surrounding that too. And Sheridan, you want to mention any other resources again for folks?
I think that going to the Defense Committee website, the movement website, or any of the movement websites will be helpful for people. And Camp McGizzy, they can, if they're on Facebook or Instagram, or I hear we're on TikTok, I don't even know what that is, but they can look up Leonard Peltier Defense Committee and they can find our systems, right? Or they can go from the website. You know, all those are on there.
Right on. Well, happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Everyday people should be thinking about this anyhow, so it's not just one day, right? I mean, it's all the cycles of the moon and stars here. And Sheridan, thanks so much again, and looking forward to having you back on, get more updates when it's time for people to move more and act on Leonard's case. We defer to you.
So, all right, thank you.
Right on. All right, Free Leonard Peltier, all political prisoners, and you've been listening to Free Them All. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook, and thanks to our friend Karen James with the Prison Pipeline Collective for helping to edit. Have a good day. Free them all. Adam here from Prison Pipeline, asking you to donate now to community-supported radio KBOO 90.7 FM. You can donate right now at kboo.fm/give. You can't be at the station to take your donation by phone, so support us online. Check out the KBOO mobile app, and you can snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. please urge your friends and family members to keep us on the air. If you want to hear my sultry pipes on Prison Pipeline, please donate now, and I can promise you that you won't find programs like Prison Pipeline anywhere else. Support the movement for community radio. Support KBOO at kboo.fm/give. Check out the KBOO mobile app and snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
And it is KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, the last week of the Fall Membership Drive right now, and we need your help to reach our goal of $55,000 by the end of Saturday. You can support KBOO by going to kboo.fm/give and make a contribution right now. We'd love to say thank you to you on the air. We want to say thank you to the folks who've donated today. We want to say thank you to Diana, to Tanya, to Lori, to Catherine, to Yvette. You can also pick up the limited edition KBOO Democracy Sounds of Democracy t-shirt at kboo.fm. You can also text the word KBOO to the number 44321. Make your contribution right now to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. Thank you so much.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.